start broadcast. So we are now live on the internet. If you're listening, you're listening to Radio Edutalk. My name is John Johnson. I'm in Glasgow, Scotland. Tonight, I'm really pleased to have Theo Kutchel. It's Kutchel, isn't it, Theo?
That's right, John.
Yeah, I've minced so many names in my time on with us. And Theo, if you're listening, is well known in the UK educational community for all sorts of things. Tonight, I hope he's going to talk a wee bit about open educational resources and other things. If you're interested in asking Theo a question during the show, you can tweet. It would be really handy if you tag that tweet edutalk #edutalk, so that'll make it nice and easy for us to pick up. And if you want to either tweet at Theo, he's THEOKL, or myself, John Johnson, JOHN JOHNSTON, that would be good too. Okay, Theo, maybe you could start by giving us a wee bit of background in your history in education, where you came from, what you've done, and what you're doing currently.
Okay, we have to go back a fair while, John. I taught art for 14 years in schools in Bradford before moving on to become an ICT advisor for ICT and art design in Bradford. Actually, I think the job's called a consultant now, but hey, what's in a label? During that period, I became very interested in computer graphics and took some high-end courses at university in stuff like Photoshop and Illustrator. And when I finished being an advisor, I spent 4 years training designers and printers in stuff like Photoshop and Illustrator, not sort of making nice pictures, but the techie stuff such as colour trapping and things like that, highly tech. But in the 90s, when the internet became a much more practical option for education, I went back into the education and I developed some digital media courses at the University of Hull. And as a result, became very heavily involved in digital media research. And I think the turning point was evaluating the BECTA, Teaching and Learning with Digital Video Assets, with Dr. Kevin Burden, who's still at the university. A lot of the if you Google it, a lot of the findings in this project are still very, very relevant, because it was way ahead of its time, and it was sponsored by Apple, by BECTA, and various people, but brought together various elements of things like remixing content, but filming and bringing it all together. Since then, I've been involved in some international video projects, including EduTube Plus and News Film Online, which was working with the ITN Archive. And at the moment, I did some work in Qatar, helping advise our digital content. At the moment, I'm working with MirandaNet on developing a MOOC for creative learning across Europe.
That last one sounds really interesting to me, Theo, and I hadn't heard about it, so maybe later on you could...
It's still in its very early days, John.
So later on you can maybe give us a wee bit of background in that, then, if you could. And tonight, the sort of kick-off question is open educational resources. Now, as a teacher... online, it's not something I come across an awful lot unless I stray into the higher education world. It's quite often shortened to OER. So, could you give us a wee bit of background in open educational resources?
Of course you can, John. Yeah, open educational resources, also known as OERs, are freely accessible, openly licensed documents and media that are made available for teaching, learning, assessment and research purposes. Quite interestingly, Joe Wilson, who tweeted earlier, and the SQA are doing some work on using open educational resources, so he may have some comments to make. But the most important thing about OERs is that they're easily discovered, shared, and they are files, documents, really any format, that can be adapted by you, and you can change them in any way you like and repurpose them. That's right at the heart of content. There are many definitions in educational OERs, but for this podcast, I think we'll just keep them simple. One thing I think we need to do is make a distinction between open and free. And I think that's a sort of first stumbling block. For example, YouTube and the Google Art Project are free but they're not open because you can't hoik YouTube videos off and remix them unless they're one of the growing number of videos on YouTube with a Creative Commons license. And I'll speak more about that license later. But having said that, embedding such videos can, together with OERs, can make some interesting resources.
So OERs, they're not quite Creative Commons, or can Creative Commons be OERs, is that?
Yeah, most OERs are either, should be Creative Commons licensed, so you can remix.
Yeah.
But various universities, resource banks such as JISC, OER, you have to check them. Not all are as open as they should be. And so that can be a stumbling block. And that's why I'm going to talk a bit more about discovery of resources you can really use. But they certainly are more prominent in HE and FE, but they are filtering down.
Yeah, I think generally teachers maybe would be more familiar almost, or teachers who are familiar with the internet would be maybe more familiar with Creative Commons licensing, because we've talked about that more, and maybe OERs, especially when you're saying, you know, the way that people will find them, it's maybe slightly more formalised or organised than is that?
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis, John. They can be, as I say, they can, I'd really divide OERs into two types. So a packaged, and you're probably thinking this first type, which is packaged educational materials, such as lesson plans, for example, e-textbooks, interactive learning stuff, multiple choice, quiz, God forbid, drill and practice exercise, and that kind of stuff. But I think the real crock of gold is the truly open media objects that can be remixed. But I would include any of these types of resources I'm going to speak about shortly as OERs as well, because I mean, all an OER is when it becomes an OER, it gets placed in a repository, or it can be curated. Licenses vary, uses vary, and a very, very wide range of stuff.
So if we're going to sort of start taking advantage of these resources, can you give us maybe a couple examples of what they bring to the classroom or to the university or the lecture theatre or the learners?
Yeah, at the widest level, I think they engage learners and teachers using simple tools and discovery methods to collect and share resources, which might include images, movies, audio files, pictures, digitized textbooks, and the teacher has the freedom to know whatever they do, they can use them safely in all curriculum areas. And so that's where stuff like, and then they can add them to things like, I don't know if you've done any edutalks on curation, which seems to be a bit of a buzzword at the moment, but where people are taking content and adding value through it by annotating and tagging. I think they help both teachers and students develop digital literacies, because working with all this stuff inevitably helps you understand how these files connect together, things like copyright, and you can include ICT and computing capabilities, for example, in coding and web skills when you remix the media. It also allows teachers and students to experience stuff that's outside the run of the normal gamut of subject textbooks, where they have, you know, where there's the stock images. It allows complete freedom and therefore adds to value to subjects and projects. We can use them for knowledge building. If you're using historic archives, it can give a really good insight to history, but you can also use it to reflect back from now and develop a cultural perspective of our society. Obviously, an awareness of copyright, which I think is very, very important, a real fundamental digital literacy for teachers is important, and they're a good starting point for creative projects.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen quite a lot of new things come on and become freely available. I'm thinking the other day, it was a welcome, Welcome Institute?
The Welcome Institute.
Big lot of stuff, and I think the British Library had puts a million images, was it, up on Flickr just a while ago?
Yeah, a million images. Yeah. And I notice you've done some remixing of them, John, as GIFs.
I think that's more play than education, but...
I would argue that's really what it's about, really. It's playing and trying things out. And I think we can categorise where these things come from. And there's so much out there, and it's just unbelievable how much open stuff. It's free to use with no copyright restrictions. A lot of it comes from cultural and heritage organisations, such as galleries, libraries and museums, many of which contribute to online repositories, such as Flickr Commons. Folk just want to Google any of this stuff if it's interest. Or simple, I'm a great believer in a simple Google will bring you to the right place. Public and governmental organisations. Now, for instance, NASA is a good example. I'm not sure how many people know that all the NASA materials, including the videos of the shuttle launches, planetary images, are all in the public domain. Scientific organisations and archives, non-profit and crowdsourced repositories such as Flickr Creative Commons, and the Internet Archive, which is archive.org, which has millions of books and films and resources, including some very interesting old British stuff from the Ministry of Information. Then, as you say, there's the organisational repositories such as the Wellcome Collection. JISC, OERs, is always a good search to stick in Googles. And then, quite interesting, there's a lot more individual curators and collectors of content. These are people, I was looking at one today, I mean, he's sort of fascinated by cars, but his car adverts going right back to the year dot, and he's carefully tagged them. He's sort of added extra information, and people on their own are creating these wealth of stuff that you just wouldn't find in the textbooks. The only sort of caveat up here is that some users in this category may be sort of getting stuff from wherever they get it from, sticking a Creative Commons license when they don't actually legally own the content, but that's quite a grey area of the scary old archives, which are probably copyrights expired.
Yeah, there seem, I mean, there's a few problems, I think, around that for teachers in general. One is that an awful lot of them will go to, say, Google Images, and even if you put in, you know, show me only content I can reuse, it's quite difficult then to ferret out the license, because if you were publishing it, say, and it is under an attribution license, sometimes it's easy if you go to Flickr because it's sitting there and it says attribution license, you know what to do. But on other ones, it requires a bit of thought and research.
John, are you aware that Google Image Search now has a new feature for finding this content?
Well, I know you can search, and it says search for content to reuse or you know, as licensable, but I've never managed to... I'm not aware that they show you the license.
To look, I'll just run through.
And I might have been wrong there.
Yeah, I think now you can search for any quality, any images that are you can freely reuse or that you can reuse commercially and so on. I think you need to be a bit pragmatic, and if it obviously looks like something that you can't use, do a double check. A very simple way of doing that is to drive the image into the Google image search box and see how many other hits come up and see where the image has been used.
That wee tip, I forget about that all the time, but that is an amazing amazing tool for all sorts of things, not just for copyright. I think a while ago I was walking and I found some butterflies which I took photographs of, and I couldn't identify them, and I uploaded them. They were very blurry because they were taken from the phone, and I uploaded them to Google Images into the search box, and they came back with dogs and bears and rotten, you know, just didn't look anything like it. But then I just put in butterfly moorland, because I saw them in Moorland, and immediately the right image came up with a clear identification. It was just a phenomenal tool, I think, and as you say, for checking out where the original image might be,
yeah,
it's pretty clever.
And it's always worth, especially if you're going to publish, it's worth just doing some quick checks and even look at the type image. I mean, what annoys me, John, there's a lot of sites on Twitter like, I don't know what they're, think of a good example, Classic Pics or something like that. It was two kids in the States. And what they're doing is taking content. Fair enough, a lot of it's open, but they don't attribute mm-hmm. where these images come from. And it makes it a nightmare finding these images. You have to drag them into Google image search and, you know, see what the provenance is.
Yeah, but see, that's an extra step, and it's quite difficult for, I think, teachers to do there. So is there, I say, you could use Flickr as your
it's
a really good way to get in there, and you're saying that there's maybe JISC and other people. Is there any one-stop shop that will lead off to all these other places?
Or Flickr's a good start. Yeah. Flickr Commons, as I say, the Google Hub made it easier to find public domain content. Just to give you off the top of my head, a few one-stop shops that I use a lot. Well, there's Flickr. There's over a quarter a billion Creative Commons licenses in the various categories, which might be, you know, you can do what you like with it. You can do what you like with it, but you can't sell it. You can do with it what you like with it, but you can't change it. The image, it's got to stay as it is. Then there's Flickr Commons, which is slightly different. If you do a search for Flickr Commons, that brings historic photographs and video, all in the public domain with no copyright restrictions, that have been contributed by museums and galleries around the world. Obviously, Internet Archive for public domain films, e-books. Rijksmuseum's quite an interesting one, RIJKS Museum, and that allows you to download really, really high resolution images of the works in the Rijk Museum, and you can do what the hell you like with it. You can make them into coffee cups, t-shirts, remix them, use them as backgrounds in videos. And of course, you mustn't forget Wikipedia, certainly Wikimedia Commons, because all the Wikipedia images are completely open, completely public domain, so there's no shortage, and a lot of them are good, very high quality. Go to Wikimedia and choose image of the day, you'll see how good some of these images are.
Yeah, and back when I was teaching kids, we quite often used Wikipedia to find pictures that we could reuse and publish. One of the things, and I said I'm going back a few years, that we did have a difficulty with, though, is if it is an attribution license, or it's the, you know, the GLP license,
yeah,
or GNU, and trying to explain that to 10-year-olds, I found was quite difficult, and I don't think I ever really did it successfully.
No, I think again you have to be pragmatic. Yeah. Work with them.
And
I mean, this subject can be as complex or as simple as you like. And obviously, I mean, there's great debates on the open content lists, you know, discussing the merits of open licensing, Creative Commons license, why can't put a Creative Commons license on public domains. So there's some serious discussion, but I don't think it's necessarily too relevant to teachers and students at the moment. Yeah. If you're looking at this field, then it's certainly good background reading.
Do you think teachers and young learners could feel fairly confident then that if they just try their best to attribute when necessary, that will go a long way to...
I think attribution is really, really important. A basic, very basic application for basic introduction to Creative Commons, just explain what it is in whichever language is appropriate with diagrams or whatever for your students or for the teachers, and take it from there. I mean, it is a complex issue, but I think, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't start. So any educator new to this, the one piece of advice I would give is just check out the Creative Commons website. Mm-hmm. And my caveat to that is You know, be very careful with industry-sponsored sites and copyright. They don't give you the full picture. They don't mention fair use, reuse, or remixing. Really, I give my age away. It's probably not a good idea to use Lady Gaga as a soundtrack for a school video. But this happens all the time. I've seen it so many times. Slightly different in the States, because they have something called parody.
Yeah.
Which we don't have yet, but a lot of us have been pushing for parody as an attribute that we can use in videos. So I don't know if you've seen any Amy Birdwell's work.
I don't know.
B-U-R-V-A-L-L-S. It's a channel on YouTube called History Teachers. She's a teacher in Hawaii. And in fact, there's a good parody of Lady Gaga and the French Revolution. It's worth looking at.
I think I have. I think she was in an ET MOOC or something I was in.
She was in the EDC MOOC.
Right, yeah. She had some, I mean, just really high class video work as far as I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She does her own music together with her partner as a composer and a lot of work with him. But it's absolutely superb, Rose. And it just shows you what can be done with resources, with a bit of creativity. And it's all sort of creative learning, and it just points us in another dimension. And actually, I learned more about the French Revolution from that video than I did at school, probably. Because then you can go and look up the details.
Connect things together. And I mean, earlier on, we kind of briefly touched on, you know, the idea of remixing as play. There's possibly quite a lot of learning that goes on in these situations that's not maybe surfaced straight away by teachers, but goes in, you know, but just by, because if you remix something, if you remix a video, if you remix it, mix an image, you've actually got to look at it very carefully.
That's right. You have to look at it much more critically. It does lead to critical thinking. And as well as remixing, you're also dealing with, you know, digital tools. Hmm. You're learning how to use digital tools for a purpose, not using them for a sake, their own sake. You've probably got some fixed outcomes in mind.
And I would say maybe the main danger from using Flickr Commons is that the amount of time you're going to lose following ideas and paths through them, because once you start dipping into this, there's just so much that's completely fascinating and strange, and the way people have used cameras and your ideas are very, very useful way of using these things, just giving people access to them.
Yeah,
gives them lots of information.
There's a lot worse things you can do than just have an hour chilling and looking at some of the stuff in there with some pointers or direction. People probably aren't aware of what there is, and you know, people, something will spark off an interest. There's loads of good stuff, and I think there's really a good case for sort of workshops or even a MOOC type thing that could be developed, where people work in groups and sort of try out some of these ideas collaboratively and individually, and share what they're doing, because that's how the good stuff happens, when people are sharing what they're doing and their ideas come across. I mean, some of the things I've seen recently, I wouldn't have dreamt to do it, but, you know, then it inspires you off in another direction.
Yeah, I wonder, Theo, if we could talk maybe a wee bit about some sort of examples of using resources that could be taken into the classroom, maybe starting with something that would be just very easy and simple to do.
All you need is the internet. So I've got to start with something called Flickr Notes. If it's a Creative Commons license, if the creators allowed it, and a lot have, will allow you to add notes or annotations to an image. And these images, these annotations can be comments, they can be hyperlinks, and you can hyperlinks to other images. You can create a digital story. The US Library of Congress, when they released images of the USA in the 30s and beyond, those things, they didn't know places, they just put up the photographs, and people suddenly told them, that's a Smith and Wesson, that's so-and-so a boiler. I used to work in this factory and this has went on. And people can cringe. So you're building up completely new knowledge that is outside the realm of the textbook and would never be in the realm of the textbook. That's one. And then he can go on to another type of narrative, which is where he uses still images with audio and motion. Ken Burns effect, for those that have heard it. And there's free apps on the iPad or the phone or the Google tablet, or you can use one of the movie editors or screencast editors. And you can add new still images, but add pan end and zoom and add motion, add a soundtrack, possibly using open audio, and there's some really good stuff with Creative Commons licenses, and build your own little video or slideshow.
Yeah, and I think that I really just love that activity. In the last few years, I've done a reasonable amount of training in simple entry-level video editing, and that's what to the sort of humour of my colleagues, because I'm always starting with still images to make a movie, but I just think it's a really easy entry-level way to start putting stuff together.
Ken Burns made a 3.5-hour epic, American Civil War, using only that technique. That's why it's called the effect. But then you can do stuff like Then and Now. There's quite a lot of this about various websites where you combine a current contemporary photograph with a hysteric historical image and just sort of blend them together. See, Then and Now, there's a lot of stuff like that in History Pin. You can hand colour. You've got black and white images or drawings like those in British Library are ideal. You can hand colour them using free browser-based software or software on your computer if you've got it, again, or software on your mobile device. Thing is, it's ubiquitous, it's easy to do, stuff we wouldn't have dreamt of doing 10 years ago. And we've got to take advantage of these simple-to-use digital tools, and we can actually make quite sophisticated stuff. And Mozilla Popcorn Maker's another, it's slightly more complex, but it allows you to use Flickr images, YouTube's video maps, and Google Maps, and create an interactive sort of experience.
I'm quite interested in the colourisation idea, Theo.
Okay, I'll go back to that.
As a primary school teacher, I've done a reasonable amount of colouring in the time, which maybe isn't good practice now, but it used to fill the odd half hour. But actually to do it with, to bring some historical
in
black and white
to life. Because you're actually looking at that image very carefully, you start to see stuff you didn't see before, which is, you know, like just good art practice, good art history. You look at the stuff and you see nuances and things that weren't there before, and you have to, does this colour fit in? It can lead you into research into hand colour photographs, or you can add value to drawings. I mean, it's not colouring in the big by number sense.
No, there's a deal of thinking and all the rest of it that goes in. I'm just thinking that, and I don't know if this is just rumour or true, because I don't know much about Greek history, but the idea that the ancient Greek statues, you see the white marble statues, were painted at one time. So that might that might be quite good fun if you were doing ancient Greeks to try and research and find out what colours to paint the various images.
That's right, and it completely changes the nature of them. And then there's very simple things you can do. For example, you know, if you want to use a really, if you use Google Docs or Forms, you can now stick an image or a video form in it and create a multiple choice quiz. You know, or you can annotate more carefully. Or if you want to go a bit deeper, then use some software like Video Notes. That's NOTE.ES, and that allows you to stick in a video and create a resource where you can go backward, jump backwards and forwards to parts that you mark on the video and add commentary and stuff. So again, it makes you look and see at these things in much more detail.
Theo, I'm kind of realising that we're getting roughly about the amount of time we said we'd spend, but I'd quite like if you would have a minute or two just to talk about the thing you touched on at the start, this MOOC that we're thinking about.
Yes.
Is there anything about that you can share yet, or?
It's very little. It's called the Hands-On Project. It's called hands-on.eu. That would give you a link to the website. It's only really just started, and it's a MOOC to help teachers in participating countries, Greece, Slovenia, Spain, Netherlands, and the UK, and they're looking at things such as creativity techniques, such as mind maps, and we've set up these MOOC, online MOOCs using Moodle, and we're gathering really what they're doing with mind maps, how they're using them, providing some tutorials, and so on. So it's still pretty early days and pretty simple, but we'll hope it'll evolve.
I mean, when you're talking about these open educational resources, it might be interesting to do something around how you would use open educational resources build some sort of crowdsourcing and that.
Yeah. That's what I mentioned to you earlier, yeah. John, I think about 10 minutes ago. I said we really need an early stage where we can develop these structures. Yeah. There's various MOOCs you can, platforms you can use. There's P2PU, and there's a new Google MOOC, which is just going to be called MOOC.org when it comes available, and interested parties would be able to contribute that. I mean, I'm writing a paper on it at the moment, which sort of goes into much more detail some of the things I've talked about to you tonight. So my voice is good again.
I can hear the cold beginning to kick in, Theo.
Yeah.
So maybe I can just say, you know, for myself and for anybody that's listening now and listening in the future, thank you very much. I think there's an awful lot more to think about and discuss, but you get around open educational resources. I certainly think there's a lot of information distribution to be done around these things, because any time you talk to a bunch of teachers, you get all these different views. But I think the sort of clear guidance you've given us tonight,
yeah,
the ways forward, is really
it's
great.
It's very early days, John. I know you're working for GLOW. Are people thinking of these terms in GLOW? early days?
I think it's very early days on that one, Theo. I would certainly think that there's a deal of discussion around openness.
Yeah.
Using open systems. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean open source, systems that can communicate. They're talking about open in a very loose way at the moment. But I would certainly think that this is one of the things we've got to look at in the longer term is how we incorporate these things. If we're providing people with online services, it would seem a no-brainer to give some training and things.
Yeah, I think that's the next stage, really, John.
Yeah.
It's raising awareness in some sort of either online or other types of workshops where people can demonstrate what they can do. And they usually, once you get going, get some amazing stuff going.
Yeah. So, thank you very much, Theo.
Thank you, John.
To people that are listening, I'm not exactly sure what's happening next week, but we should have a show on the 5th of February. We've got the Professional Learning for Teachers on the 6th of February, where Gemma P. Duck, who's going to be talking about promoting and encouraging active and cooperative learning. And on Wednesday after that, we've got Moira Stalker, who's the National Coordinator of the Scottish Food and Drink Federation School Programme. Quite a mouthful. And if you look at edutalk.cc/upcoming, you can see the shows. There's a good number of shows queued up which look really interesting. So I'll just say thanks again, Theo, and I will hang up. Good night, folks.